So,
the Rob said earlier this week, actually I think it was Mendy who said it, Mendy Katz. Pusik starts out, it talks about an Adam, a human being who becomes Tame. And Rashi says, only Klal Yisrael are called Adam, but not Vaydei Kachavim, which is a colloquial term for non-Jews. Right? And the question is, what does it mean? So he told the story of the Bailiff's trial in Russia, I think it was the early 1900s. I'm not good with history, and it's whatever he said. A fellow by the name, he says, Mendel Bailiff, was captured to some one of these blood libels or whatever. And, you know, he's being held for supposedly killing a Goyish kid, etc. And it was, because it was so much later in history, it caught the attention, they said, of all the world, the Western world, and there were protests all over, etc. So it said the prosecution in Russia said, you Jews don't consider Goyim to be human beings. And they quoted this Rashi. So it says that the defense attorney, who was a Shomer Torah mitzvos, turned to Rav Meir Shapiro, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he said, tell him the following. He says, there is no plural for Adam. Adam can mean one man, can mean many. You can't find the word. There's Ish Anashim. Isha, right? Nashim, etc. You have that. But for Adam, there's no plural. Why is that? And he said, the reason is because Klal Yisrael was unique. And the judge says, unique? He says, listen, he said, here is a man in Russia who's being charged with being a murderer. And you've got Jews protesting in America, in London, and various other places. He says, do we ever see anywhere that if a trial occurs and the defendant is a non-Jew, have you ever seen such a tumult, a worldwide tumult? And the judge says, I agree, no. He says, I'll tell you why. He says, we were told that we, Klal Yisrael, share one joint soul. We're all part of one another. He says, and that's why we're called Adam. It's because we stand up one for another. It's not that we're elitist. It's how we behave. It's how we were created, and it's our natural ability. And he says, that's the concept of Adam. That's why a Yid can be an Adam. And a non-Jew who doesn't have the same feeling, the same reactions, is not an Adam. This week's Parsha, our Tezriya Metzora, and we're talking about Tumah and Tahara, the first rules come talking about a mother who gave birth, right? Then it deals with the skin conditions. It talks about Ziva, this idea of being a woman, where some sort of bodily discharge occurs. Then it deals with Keri, a man who passes semen, and Anida, which is the natural way of the life, right? A woman gets her period. And Rabbi Rosner writes, as many other people have said, the word impurity for Tumah is really a difficult and almost inanapro definition. what? The person became contaminated from one minute to the next. They're somehow dirty. He said, what does this mean? And he said, that's why the concept of a mother giving birth is the first and the paradigm example of what we call tumah, which, because there's no English equivalent, means some sort of lessening of holiness. And he said, logic would dictate that a woman who brings new life into the world should be on the highest madrega, the highest category of spiritual growth, and yet somehow something has happened. He said, so I refuse, and he says everybody refuses to say this is an act of impurity. He quotes Rav Adin Steinsaltzitzel, who says, I'll give you a rational approach to what tumah is. He said, in this world, things are either living or, God forbid, they're dead. These are two diametrically opposed status, and you got to be one or the other. Unless, of course, you're a domain, a stone, or something like that, which is another category. But anything that God created with the ability to be high, alive, has this possibility. Now, Steinsaltz says, whenever something alive or could have been alive, could have created life, or is connected to life, all of a sudden loses the ability to be live or the potential for living, there is a void. The void of life is what he says is tumah. He says, we know that the highest level of tumah is a tumah zames. That's the aviyavot haTorah, a tumah, highest. Because it's the greatest change. As Rav Lierfeld often says, Rav Moshe Feinstein, 10 minutes before he went to the Olam HaEmes, right, was the height of Kedusha. There's no question. He was a Gadol HaDor. He had attained what we might say in our eyes, perfection. 10 minutes later, unfortunately, his neshama left him, and Rav Moshe Feinstein becomes a source of tumah. How could that be? And he said, what we're being taught is, because the level of where he attained no longer exists, that is a diminution in the spirituality of the individual. Right? He says, I'll give you an example. He says, a snake, right, which is the embodiment of evil, which created the first sin, doesn't cause impurity when it's dead. Holding a dead snake does not make us tame. And he says, let's look at the way it lived. It was cursed by a Kaddish Baruch Hu to have no needs. It could eat the dust that slithers in. It never has to turn to a creator to have any connection. Whatever it needs is there. It crawls in the dirt. It eats the dirt, right? And it never, ever has to focus, if that's the right word, on anything above dirt. It's dead while it's alive because it has no potential. That's why it cannot cause impurity. He says, in that vein, when a woman has her period, she could have been a mother. The fact that when her period occurs, it's the end of the cycle, means that a potential for life no longer exists within her, and that causes a diminution in some sort of spirituality. Metsora, right? The individual has certain prescribed types of marking, discolorations, etc., right? Have to go to a client. If, in fact, he has contracted, right, Faraz, he now has to segregate from the community. He can no longer be part of what we might have said earlier, part of the Adam encounter, right? Until he repairs whatever needed to be repaired, he's not part of the greater community. He says, let's talk about a kli, a receptacle, a utensil, which becomes able to become tameh, but if it's unfinished, if, as he says, in the old days, you had the pottery still on the kiln, because it wasn't finished, it couldn't become tameh. And, he said, there's another interesting point. You take a keli, that's tameh, and you bust it. You put a hole in it, right? It's lost its status of tumah, because now it can never, ever again gain utility. When something is broken and has no function within life, it's divorced from the realm of the living, and its status is that, and it can't gain any impurity. There's no greater moment, he says, in a woman's life than the moment she gives birth. For 9 months, she's gone through a process of buildup, of pregnancy, and then into labor. And after those final painful pushes, right, that we see on TV, but hopefully we don't have to see in real life since we're men, right? After that, it's over, so to speak. She now has the entity she carried in her hands, God willing. It's a miracle. There's no question. But now she has again lost the fetus that nurtured off her, that was part of her very being to that point, right? And that is considered the need for remedy of spirituality. In other words, she had been on the highest level, but now, because of the way God created the world, she's come down. And he says, that's why for a male, the complete period of purification after birth is 40 days, when she gives birth to a boy. And when she gives birth to a girl, it's 80 days. Because when she's given birth to a girl, the girl she had in her is, yes, another child, but it's also potentially another mother. So to speak, there's a greater loss. You know, yeah, we don't, you know, I guess if we ever asked anybody, halachically, is a mother carrying a girl holier than someone carrying a boy? I don't think we'd get an answer yes.
And there were two children.
Yeah.
And one's a boy, one's a girl. And they can only say one. Are you telling me they should save the girl?
Excellent question. He doesn't say that.
Right.
No. They always save the one who's most viable. That's the halacha, right. I know, right. Yeah. So if you want total explanation of this, it's like Rav Chaim Mezi said, Acher Me'ev Yesrim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will explain it all. Now, even Rabbi Rosner, right, doesn't have a fully functioning, completely satisfying answer for what it all means. The Medrash Tanchuma talks about last week's end of the Parsha, Parsha Shmini, and this week Tazria. In Shmini, we learned all of the laws of kosher animals, kosher birds, kosher locusts, etc. And we then move to the notion of Tazria, the notion of this tuma, and it talks about childbirth. He says there's a medrash that's bothered, saying it doesn't readily see the connection. And it says, it posits, he says, that Hashem teaches us that each fetus learns in utero the halachas of kashrus, and then, right, that when the malach, we always say the malach touches the child when it's born, that's how we have, for most people, the little indentation at the bottom of our nose. And the child is then asked to accept all the Torah. He quotes Rav Avram Shor in Halacha the Halibub, a sefer, and he said, how can kashrus in any way somehow be the symbolism of all the mitzvahs in the Torah, which I'm gathering this medrash says? He quotes Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. The first basic step in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu is focusing on what we can and not ingest, what we can eat. So much of our life is involved in the action of eating. We've got mitzvahs matzah, mitzvahs kiddush, right? Mitzvahs pidyon haben, the mitzvah of asiyum, etc., right? And there are other times we eat to sustain ourselves. That's what we need to do. There are times people eat three meals a day and they may snack as well. He says there's so much that is involved in food. The whole idea that on Shabbos and Yom Tov we have meals, right, for Oneg, to celebrate Shabbos, to celebrate Yom Tov, right, to further proof. Food is a litmus test of an approach to living. We are required to be careful what it is we eat. We have to make sure that we make a bracha, a proper bracha, both before we eat it and afterwards. We're told not to be gluttonous, to eat like a mensch. And with this, we're being given the potential to remind ourselves, where did this come from? Right? Paseach es yodecha mas bia l'chol chai ratzon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world with perfect symmetry where there is food and nourishment for all creatures. Rav Tzadok says, let's think about the first Aveira in history. It involves the fruit of, right, the tree. He said this too is symbolic. He says somehow the Medrash is telling us the new fetus is taught about kashrus first, and the first mitzvah given to Adam and Chava was concerning food. And it wasn't an issue of idolatry, promiscuity, theft, but somehow about restricting that which we put into our mouths. The Vilna Gaon says, if one wants to comprehend a certain idea, you've got to look at the first time it occurs in the Torah. Therefore, he says, avoiding that food which is forbidden is the paradigm for avera. If we can discipline ourselves to act appropriately vis-a-vis this, it can influence the rest of our lives. The way we deal with the necessity for nourishment, whether it be at home, whether it be at a kiddush, whether it be at an event, he said that creates a framework of how we live. We see, he says, how Shmini and Tazria are connected. Shmini, right, he says, is a paradigm for the approach that we have to have to life. And he says, let's go to the Seder. When the Rasha says, what is a service to you? The simple meaning of the verse is, service means the Korban Pesach. However, the addition of to you indicates something else. The word to you has something to do with you. The Gemara in Sachim 68b says, all agree that we also require lochem. There's an Indian of lochem. When a yontif comes, we're not to spend the entire day davening and learning. Chazi lochem, Hashem, b'chazi lochem. It's supposed to be partially or half for HaKadosh Baruch Hu for spirituality and half for enjoying physicality. The wicked son says, I don't understand this whatsoever. I understand the time you spend in shul. I understand the time you sit by your Gemara. But how the heck can you elevate yourself sitting at a meal with four types of booze, eight times of dips, etc., etc.? That's feeding yourself. How can there be spirituality? And the Torah says, when you take that approach, so to speak, you know, let God remain in the synagogue and nowhere else, you've now denied the Torah, the principle of the Torah. And you're considered a kofer hakol. You're considered somebody who denies the entire Torah. And that's why it says, Hakayashina, take the child who is, quote, the Rasha, blunt his teeth. Metaphor, you don't need teeth. You don't know how to use them to serve the Rabbeinu Shlomo. It'll be better off if they fell out. He says the connection between Shmini and Tazria is to teach us that the approach to Judaism begins how we handle food. Meticulous keeping of kashrus, brachas before and after meals, the way we can integrate a meal where we can sing zmiros, we can say an interesting Dvar Torah, we can talk to our children about how their week went, what were the highlights, etc. This is representative of how we live. And that is why, before we get to the concept of childbirth, the concept of a new life, we talk about the importance of careful approach to food and eating. Okay.